Igen. So, our continuing adventures in high technology. Another recording machine. It's very interesting. Trying to get the right format, the right machine. Even when it's audio, it's not simple. With video, it's even more complicated. Very interesting about that. For about 2 weeks or so, 2 or 3 weeks, I've been plunged into a different, I've been focusing on, been interested in, let's say, because of my situation of having been informed that I will no longer have employment in a short amount of time. You didn't know this?
No.
Okay. My newspaper is being closed. In Paris. And so all of us are being fired. As we say in British English, made redundant, which is a very interesting phrase. Because redundant means unnecessary, superfluous, excess. If you have a sentence and there's a word that is extra that you don't need, you say that, it's redundant to say that, so you eliminate that word. So in British English, that's what they say when you've been licencié, in French we say, in British English, they say made redundant. So the newspaper is being closed in Paris, and 69 people are being made redundant, let's say. And I am one of them, all of the journalists. So I've been thinking a lot about this. And
Since when do you know it? Two weeks or 2 months?
2 weeks, I think. And when was the day that we talked to...
It was about 2 weeks.
Yeah. It was the day after we agreed to rent the center that we are renting. So I've been thinking... It's very interesting to be in this position because I feel like I've been even more put into the center of what is the reality of our... the times we're living in. I've been given this really concrete access to all of the turmoil that is that the way that our society functions is giving rise to. And it's a wonderful opportunity in that sense to plunge into it. For my poetry work as an artist, but also for my work as a Zen teacher, and just for my work as being a human being, right? So this question of work, I've just used the word work 3 times. So when you say you're out of work, so you lose your job, you're unemployed, you're not employed. And so I looked around and I started looking at things and saying, are they employed? So are the trees at work? Are they employed? Is the wind working? Is that a job? These are just a couple of examples of, so I'm really expanding this, opening my mind to all of this, because it's most of the time, this is the only job I've ever had. I've been working at the same place for 34 years. So, I've never really given much thought to work except of course that I have to go do it and being paid for it. But for 20 years now, for 20 of those 34 years, that's not where my work, my life's work is. So my life's work is involved in my art and in my Zen practice and in my family. So that work that I'm being paid for is not actually my work. So already I have just intuitively redefined what work is. Not really paying much attention to it. I'm paying attention to it, of course, but not thinking I'm going to redefine what work is or whatever. And the ramifications of this are vast. And we see it in our culture, where people, our culture has become where you live to work. People's lives are their work. And I see it with my colleagues. They're very identified with this work that they do, and they're losing it. And this is very dramatic. And many of them are, everyone is over 40. Everyone who's being made redundant is over 40, which makes it very complicated to find work, especially in a very specialized skill, being an English language journalist, highly, highly qualified, and among the best in the profession. But there's no work for those people in Paris, so in a French culture. So that means they will have to go somewhere else or do something else. And so that means their entire identity has to change if they're identified with that. Right. So I won't go into all the messy details of it, but because I don't know all of them yet. In the middle of all this, I came across this fabulous quote from John Maynard Keynes, great economist. I don't, maybe Joa can tell us a little bit more about him, I don't know. But Keynesian economics, if we had followed what he suggested, the world would be a different place today, let's say. After World War II, when they were trying to decide how to structure the world economy and how to base things and whatever, he made a plea for something more egalitarian. Do you know the details of it? No? Bretton Woods?
Yeah.
So I'm not exactly what he pleaded for, but he didn't win. And they always say that it would be a different world if Keynes had won at Bretton Woods. I don't know exactly why, but when I hear this quote that he said before that, he said this in 1933, it tells me something of what we could have had. Because he foresaw what our world is today. I'll read it in English and then we can translate it in French if you want to. So it's short, it's only two sentences. We destroy the beauty of the countryside because the unpopulated splendors of nature have no economic value. We are capable of shutting off the sun and the stars because they do not pay a dividend. A dividend, how do you translate that in French?
Same.
And that's kind of where our world is today, right? Everything has an economic value, and if it doesn't, it's eliminated, it's redundant. I could say just my experience with my workplace is that when they tally up the numbers, this place where I work is not considered worthwhile. So it's, to their numbers game, it's more valuable to pay $15 million to eliminate it, because that's what it will cost them. And do something else, not taking into account the lives of all the people who are It's just money. They give us a lot of money. So we'll give you a lot of money to go away. The value that is putting on it is all monetary, in other words. So will we get to the point where we can turn off the sun and the stars because it's not, because they don't pay dividends, because they don't give us a return on our investment, right? And this, where do we draw the line then, right? So where is the line of what is valued, what is not valued, what is an investment, what is a return, what is a dividend? Dividend, I'm assuming, comes from the notion of dividing. So you divide up the profits among the investors, right? So you have to have profits in order to divide, to have something to divide. And if you don't have profits, well, then then we shut it down. So let's shut down the sun because it's not giving us any dividends. This relates directly to our practice, right? In the sense that in the world that the Keynes is describing, we see in full bloom greed, anger, and ignorance, right? As soon as it's about, I want more profits, I want more dividends, we're talking about greed. By not appreciating the splendors of the unpopulated nature, we're also talking about ignorance. Or not appreciating the individual beings and lives of various people, we're talking about ignorance. And when we don't have the dividends, when we don't have the profits, we lose our jobs, whatever, it brings up a lot of anger. They all feed into one another. I see my colleagues, some of them are very, very angry, and rightfully so. You know, we've been lied to, and we're being made redundant, as it were, just because somebody put the figures in this box and others in this box and decided that these figures were better than these figures. You know? And the head of the company of the New York Times, who is doing all of this, got a bonus last year of $24 million. And the rest of us are being shoved aside. So, greed, anger, ignorance. To not see the value of a thing as it is, to not see things as they are, that's what we call ignorance. And when we don't see that, well, then we do things like this, like what the New York Times is doing. No one has ever said that the New York Times is an enlightened enterprise. So I'm not telling you anything new, right? And it's not just the New York Times. It just happens to be the one that I know very well. So we have all these questions of what is value, what is work, what is dividend, what is pay, what is salary, all of these things that apply directly to our practice. Because our practice basically is just this is it. So whatever you are doing is of value. Whatever it is valuable, because this is it. Our practice is just that. This is it. And anything you are doing is it. It's about walking, the illumination of walking around in life. That's the work. That's your life's work. Your life's work is to live. And then, of course, we have to feed ourselves and we have to clothe ourselves and have shelter. So in exchange for a service, someone gives us something that we can then give in exchange for another service. That's what money is, right? So why should some people have more of it than others? Now, I'm not going to go into, you know, political theory and economic theory and communism and socialism and all of this, but these are very basic issues and that relate directly to our practice. Enlightenment, as it were, You know, I mean, we could say in a sense Keynes is has an enlightened perspective. He's saying basically, see the splendor of what is. Splendor, what is, how do you say that in French? Splendor, right?
Splendor.
Yeah. The splendor of what is. It's such a fabulous word, splendor, and not used very often. In German, how would you say it? Do you have a word like that?
Überfluss, difficult.
In Portuguese?
Esplendor.
It's difficult to think in two languages.
It's difficult to what?
Think in two languages.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, it's true. in any case, you get the idea, right? In German, yeah. Now, in Hebrew, do you have a word for that?
No, yeah. A lot.
A lot.
A
lot. A lot.
Splendor. It must come from Latin if we say
in
that.
In Greek? Greece?
No.
Hebrew.
Hebrew.
Must come, yeah, I mean, sure, it comes from Greek or Latin, but, you know. But that's what our practice is, just to see the unpopulated splendors, but it can be populated splendors too. You know, there are populated is also splendid. You know, there are moments in the middle of the, you know, the Gare du Nord or something where you can see the splendor. There are moments in the middle of, you know, when you go to the, what do you call that? When you dump the déchetterie, the, you know what you call it? In English we say the dump. You go to the dump and you can see the splendor, you know, or, it doesn't have to be unpopulated, but what he's saying is, we're destroying it. We're destroying it by building things, populating things, attempting to control what is wild, because we want to get some value from it. We think that its value can be gained. There is nothing gained or lost when we see things as they are. So there's nothing to do. We don't have to change the landscape to make it more valuable, as it were. Now, you know, there is the very concrete issue that I am facing, but, you know, millions and millions and millions of people are facing of unemployment. You know, suddenly, what do we do then in a world like this? and I came across a story by, in this, I know I talk about him a lot, Joseph Campbell, this book that I was reading. And he tells a story from Ramakrishna, so it's Indian, about a tiger. A female tiger was pregnant and was starving and needed to eat, and she saw a herd of goats. She ran after the goats and jumped too hard and fell, which brought on the birth of the baby, the tiger cub, and she died. So here was this tiger cub, and the mother was dead next to her, the cub. And the goats came back and took the cub and saw a hungry, you know, baby and started feeding it and raised it. But, of course, the tiger had no idea that it was a tiger. It thought it was a goat, you know, so it was behaving like the goats, making a sound like a goat and eating grass because goats are vegetarian and probably learning to jump like a goat or whatever. And then along comes another tiger, a male tiger, you know, the king of the forest, and runs to attack the goats, and all of the goats ran. But the little, the young cub, he wasn't so much a cub anymore, he was a young tiger, stood there. And the male, the king tiger, was very surprised to see this young tiger just standing there. And you know, addressed him. This is a fable, right? So he addressed him and he said, "What are you doing? You know, what are you, you're a tiger. You shouldn't be here with these goats. You know, what? Why are you behaving this way?" And he said, "Well, I'm a," and the little one said, "Well, I'm a goat." And he said, "No, you're not." And he picked him up by the scruff of his neck and dragged him off to a pond, you know, a lake, a lac. So there was water. And said, and they both bent over and he said, "Now look, you see my face? That's your face too. We both have the same face. You're a tiger. You're not a goat." He could see, so something was starting to dawn on him. He could see that, in fact, you know, he'd never seen his face before and thought, "Oh wow, something is happening there." And so the king tiger took him off, picked him up by the scruff of his neck again, and took him to the den of lions, where there was a dead gazelle, and they were all eating it. And the big king lion said to the other one, tiger said to the other one, "Eat." He said, "No, I'm not going to eat that. I'm a vegetarian." And the king tiger took a bunch of it and shoved it in his mouth and made him swallow it. And he was kind of gagging. And Joseph Campbell adds, this is how many of us react when we encounter the truth. And but then as he had this meat and he started feeling something in his veins and let out kind of something kind of like a roar between a bah and a roar, you know, kind of vague, and but the king tiger said, "Ah, yeah, okay, so now you see you're a tiger. Be a tiger." So Joseph Campbell tells his story, and he says, he tells it to his students, and he asks them what they think the point of the story is, and this was from the 1960s in America, Joseph Campbell. So the students would say, "Put a tiger in your tank," which used to be a slogan for a essence, you know, that you put in cars.
Oui, c'est à tout, hein? Mettez un tigre dans votre moteur.
C'est vrai? Ah, oui. Ça doit être la même compagnie, hein?
Oui, ah, oui.
Probablement. I don't know which one it is, but... Yeah. Yeah. And so Joseph Campbell said, yes, more appropriately, it's... Go into the forest. Here we are in the forest. Go into the forest of night, if you have to. And find your tiger. Find who you really are. That you've been living among these goats. Not that the goats were bad. The goats were, you know, it was a great thing the goats did to raise the tiger. But find out who you are. You're not who you think you are. And it's only then that you are then free. And you can become who you really are. And you sound like who you are. This is not an apology to eat meat or not eat meat. It's nothing like that. Okay? It's just a fable, right? Put a tiger in your tank in the sense that be who you are. And the only way you can do that is if you really look. Go into the forest, go into the night of the forest. The forest of the night, Campbell says. He always uses this metaphor of, you know, the still pond, that by sitting... there's the stillness that then allows us to see who we truly are. I always like to modify the story of Narcissus, where the Greek myth, Narcissus, who falls in love with his image, you know, and he sees it in the pond. My version is, which is kind of, I got it from James Joyce, is that when he looks there, he sees who he truly is and disappears. It's not that he dies because he falls in love with his image, but he falls in love with who he truly is. He sees who he truly, he sees his true identity there and becomes a flower, is what this, and that's why we have these, which ties in with our story of the Buddha with this flower, you know. In the Greek myth, Narcissus falls into the lake because he falls in love with himself and becomes a flower. And we still have these flowers in the springtime called Narcissus, right? But when you see you are the flower, then you will not destroy the unpopulated landscape because it doesn't give you any profits. It doesn't have any economic value. Right? But when you see you are the flower, you are the plant, you are the trees, you are the wind, you are the other, then there is no question of economic value or not. I guess in terms of work and value and all of that, the point of this practice, as it were, is ultimately leads us to the fact that anything you are doing is an opening to the way. So whatever it is, if you're unemployed or employed, if you're begging in the street, if you are investing millions, if you're a movie star, if you're a street cleaner, if you are a mountain climber or whatever. Whatever you are doing is an opening to the way. Now, most of the time we don't see that. So people just go on doing what they're doing without looking into it and seeing that it's not somewhere else. We don't have to see it somewhere else. We don't have to do a specific job in order to find an opening to the way, because whatever your job is the opening to the way. And I say job because I'm just using our lingo, you know, of our culture, but whatever it is that you're doing, walking down the street is an opening to the way. Writing notes in a notebook, listening to music, talking on the telephone, whatever, it's an opening to the way.
Trying to find a value in everything, also
it can be an opening to the way, exactly, if we see it that way. If we see that that's an opening to the way, I mean, it is an opening
but
to the way,
but then it hurts others.
In what way? Can you give an example?
It hurts others in a way that capitalism hurts people.
Well, see, but if we saw that, if what we, when we're practicing our capitalist ways, if we saw that that is the way, we wouldn't do it like that anymore.
No, that's true.
That's why I say, if someone asked me if I would come and teach Zen, you know, to business people or something. And of course there are people who teach meditation to business people. But I said, if I really did it and they really got it, they would be terrible businessmen in the sense that they would not do what their company wanted them to do. Unless it was a company that wanted them to use their profits to feed people or something, I don't know, you know, whatever. Or like Bernie Glassman who approaches it. It's not that business is bad, it's what we do with it that's bad, or harmful, let's say.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
may I say something?
Please do.
So my business is taking care of dying people. And the whole thing is even worse, because we don't know our values. I'm having so many talks about people talking about using assisted suicide to leave, because they don't have any dividend in life anymore.
Mm-hmm.
That's how we feel when we don't fit the structure of our society. So if there seems to be an unnamed set of values that we are not aware of. And then we get old and we get sick and we get aware of our own impermanence very concretely, not theoretically. And we don't fit that value structure anymore. We do not even get made redundant. We are pushed to redund ourselves. And I mean completely. And it's very difficult to make people, what is the value of a human being?
Absolutely.
We see the splendor of the nature, we might acknowledge that, but we don't see our own thing, and that our impermanence is part of it.
Of course.
We see it as a kind of deficiency, and when we really have to face it, then that's it. And he was a mountain climber when he was younger, and I told him, well, what you plan is you are on walking towards a peak, and 200 meters before the peak you turn around. Because this is part of the deal. But what does it mean to be a human, the value of a human being until the moment you die?
Hmm. Yeah. But it's the same, I mean,
right.
It's the same,
it's
the same
even
thing.
Worse, but we
yeah.
even kill ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of how I mean what I call it is capitalist genocide.
Exactly, because what we are doing is collective.
Yeah, it's a capitalism genocide.
Exactly. We're all killing ourselves at work.
Yeah, or for, what
for,
we
for the benefits
for
of someone.
Identify with the values that we set up as a society.
Yep. Yeah.
And it's our values about greed, anger, and ignorance.
That's where the story of the goats and the
right.
tiger come in.
Right. But it even goes so far that we will kill ourselves if we don't admit.
Yep. Yep. When I started a psychoanalysis many, many years ago, I went for a first session and then I came back. And so the first session I didn't have to pay. And when I came back and I decided I would work with the guy, he said, and I said, how much is it? And he said, well, you tell me. Think about it. How much are you worth? And he said, come back and tell me, you know, the next session. Think about it. Oh, interesting, huh? You know? How much are you worth? It's not so easy to put a monetary value on how much am I worth? It wasn't an easy thing to do.
How did you resolve?
How much is your worth?
So I did a lot of thinking about it, and I asked around to what other people were paying, you know? What's the market price? What's the rate, the going rate, you know, for psychoanalysis these days? I had already done some therapy before, so I knew what I had paid before, which was many years before that. So I looked around and I looked at what I felt I could afford in terms of, you know, how much revenue I had and my expenses and whatever. And I told him that, and I came up with a figure, and I told him that, and he said, okay. Now, if I had said a different figure, would he have said okay? I don't know.
La question était quelle valeur vous donnez?
Qu'est-ce que vous vaut?
Vous valez.
Vous valez.
Qu'est-ce que vous valez?
Yeah. No, I didn't ask, je n'ai pas posé la question, j'ai dit combien c'est le prix.
Oui.
Le prix.
Et il a dit, combien est-ce que vous, quel prix vous êtes prêt à payer, dans le sens quel prix vous valez vous-même.
Il ne m'a pas dit qu'est-ce que vous êtes prête à payer. Il m'a, quand j'ai dit combien c'est, il m'a dit réfléchissez combien vous valez.
Vous valez.
Like it's really, I'm always, when I have this discussion with people, there's this big, like, what's the value of a human being?
Yeah. Absolutely.
And what's mine? And your discussion of vastness.
Exactly. And you have to see first yourself, and then when you see the value of you, you see the value of the other.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, you know, the Auschwitz would not have happened if people had seen the value of a human being, you know? The world wouldn't be like it is today if we saw the value of a human being. Most, you know, if there was a general consensus on the value of a human being, the world would not be like it is today. But, you know, I hesitate also to use we, because of course there is a collective thing happening, but there's also individuals, and there are individuals in any given moment who see the value of a human being. And then maybe it changes. Maybe they don't see it again. But there are moments. You know, the exchange, the experience we had on the train yesterday.
Yeah, I was really was thinking
was quite
about
interesting,
it.
You know.
I was thinking about it.
There was nothing lofty about it. But there was a real interaction of human beings recognizing the situation of other human beings,
mm-hmm.
and offering there was no value. They weren't getting any benefit, any dividend from what they were offering or exchanging information. There was no payment in return for it.
I think much of us don't realize that we are allowed to be what we are, because those people that normally just stay in the train with bad faces and looking to the phone, they think that if they chat with the person that is on the side, that person will think he's crazy or something. And maybe that person wants to chat with him too. But
like you said about yourself yesterday.
Yeah. And that's how society is, no? We think we are all goats.
Mm-hmm.
But we have the tiger inside already, and many of us just already know it, and maybe if even don't know it, have the anxiety. I don't know.
Anxiety.
Really feels that something is coming up. But we don't stop and sit too many times, so we think we're not allowed to let it be. Because I really think that we are many already wanting, thinking that the world like this is not working, feeling, because we already experienced that the world is not working like this. But it still seems that we are not allowed to break.
Hmm.
We don't realize that we can do it.
We don't disobey.
Yeah, we don't disobey yet. Yet.
Yeah.
No?
But yet. It's like, I think it's yet.
Yet. Exactly. Because I think it's emerging. It's growing inside of each of us. And in some point, we will feel that we can, no, it's enough.
And that's the question. As much as we are identified with the self and with our greed, anger, and ignorance, and I can tell you, as soon as it goes about your own life, the scope gets smaller and smaller and smaller. We can have great ideas, but if you need a shelter and you need food and you need something.
Yeah, but the
to
shelter
eat,
is you. You are your shelter inside. Yeah.
I'm talking about very concrete things, having a house to sleep in, having something on the plate. If you're hungry, it's very hard to be.
I know. I'm just saying that that's the kind of thought that made us come to capitalism.
Which kind of thought?
That we have to have a house and have a food, and then we want to, now that we have a house and food, we want a machine. And now that we have a house and a food and a machine, we have a car. We want a car. And that's where it started.
Well, that's when we talk about greed.
Yeah, yeah.
That's
it's the
needs,
the line
basic
is
needs
this
are different than greed.
Yeah.
No,
yeah.
Of course, but
that's,
it all started in there.
There was this wonderful thing that Patrick and I were talking about the other day at the Palais de Tokyo of when John Giorno, the poet, was had an expo. Did anyone else see that? No. What was the thing in the beginning when you walk in the room with all the screens and he's reciting his thank you, isn't it?
It's thank you for nothing.
Yeah, thank you for nothing. It's this most amazing thing. It's just fabulous. And there's nothing, it's like, there's no dividend, huh? It's like, it's just, he goes on and on. Can you, do you remember some of the things?
Oh yeah, it's like, what's the context? I mean, is the context is like a scenery, like in
a
theater.
Stage, a theater, it's in a theater, yeah.
But what he's doing is like the Tibetan ritual of what of I think that's what the Tibetan do before dying, no? Of offering, giving up everything to, and that's what he was doing.
Yeah, I think it was his 70th birthday or something. He was doing it. It was like on his 70th birthday he did this.
Yeah,
I think
yeah. But what was amazing about what he was offering there is was usually oh, it's difficult for me to speak in English.
You can speak in French. For
yeah.
me, it's okay.
Oui, ça va. Je peux parler en français.
Et on peut traduire après.
Oui, pour.
Yeah, yeah.
Pour Sonia et
on va traduire
ouais.
après.
C'est qu'on on est habitué en général on offre de l'amour, on offre de la compassion, on offre des choses belles, des choses douces. Et dans ce qu'il offrait, il y avait des choses qui étaient très belles et très douces, mais il allait jusqu'à offrir tous les amants qu'il avait eus dans sa vie et qui maintenant étaient morts. Et il demandait à tous ces amants qui étaient morts de revenir pour que vous tous, si vous le vouliez, vous pouvez de baiser ces amants et avoir et expérimenter l'extase du plaisir. Et moi, et tout le chocolat que j'ai mangé dans ma vie, parce que j'adore le chocolat, j'aimerais que tout ce chocolat revienne et que vous le sentiez, et que vous sentiez de sugar rush dans vos veines, et que vous en ressentiez le plaisir. Il va très
C'était,
loin dans ce sens. Il continue. Ça dure quoi? Ça dure
20 minutes peut-être.
Moi je dirais une demi-heure.
Ah, peut-être.
Peut-être
oui.
Ou ça paraît très long. Ça paraît très très
ça,
long.
Tu veux bien traduire pour Sonia et lui.
Et fini après par les gourous, oui, évidemment, et tous les gourous que j'ai. Parce que John Giorno est maître de Dzogchen. Il est maître de Dzogchen. Il a été c'était les lèvres de Jujom Rinpoche, c'est-à-dire the head guy of the Nyingma Pass. Et donc c'est un poète, c'est un peintre et c'est un maître de Dzogchen. Et il finit en disant tous les maîtres que j'ai eus dans ma vie et qui maintenant sont morts, je les appelle pour qu'ils reviennent, pour que vous puissiez bénéficier de leur enseignement et ainsi il n'arrête pas enfin, comme ça.
It was really fabulous, just this endless litany of thank, but not like, you know,
past things.
Huh?
For past things.
Yeah, past things.
And it's the not like if or... it's not like like if it's his mouth who is speaking. It's like it's we he does
his
with his
being.
Body, with
yeah.
the whole body. He's like jumping
and he's like it's transmitted on different screens.
Yeah.
And in some of them he's wearing a white tuxedo, and some of them he's wearing a black tuxedo, and he's barefoot. And he comes walking down the steps at the beginning, I think, and then that is like transmitted on different screens. It's really, it's a whole, it's a performance, but it's his whole being, like, is thanks for nothing, you know? And yet he goes on for half an hour listing all of these things he's thankful for. Thanks for nothing. It's so, so beautiful. Really amazing piece. It's probably on the internet somewhere.
The name?
John Giono.
John.
He's an American poet. He's still alive. He's still alive. And he's completely a manifestation of his practice at that moment. You know, of his years and years. I don't know how many, 40 years probably or something. He's been practicing 50. I don't know.
He started practicing with the learning mappers in the early 60s.
Yeah. So he's a long time practitioner. But all the while, you know, a major figure in the underground countercultural art scene in New York, Patrick knew him in New York in those days, right?
Yeah, yeah, he lives in the house of William Burroughs, the banker.
Yeah. So it's not like you have to, you know, be this pious Tibetan Lama with a, you know, saffron robe or something. It's what you are doing is the entrance to the way, and that's, he lives it, John Verno. I mean, he really manifests it.
He drank a lot. He took a lot of drugs. He had a lot of. He fucked a lot of men, mostly because he was. He's homosexual and,
but he loves women too. It's not like it's exclusive.
Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, it's anyway. If we can, you know, say thanks for nothing, it's endless what we're thankful for. You know.
What's impressed me about this guy is like he uses also. He's not afraid of negative. Of what we call negativity in entre parenthèses, he use negativity as something which is just as what we call positivity in which is, and he most of his poems are. We will say negative, like this short one. Everybody is a failure.
Yeah.
Everybody is a painting. It's a huge painting, and it's everybody is a failure.
Yeah.
It sounds negative at first when you read that, but I don't know, when I read that I felt it's true in a way. I feel as a human being I'm a failure. There is something people around were laughing at it, reading that and laughing at it and looking at each other and smiling at each other because and feeling connected from negativity. They felt connected.
Well, and I mean, in Zen teaching, Dogen says life is one continuous mistake.
Oh yeah, too, yeah.
or Dido Lori used to say, accept the whole catastrophe. The whole thing is a catastrophe. Or Surya Das, who Alain told me used to say, be a total flop. You know?
You are a total
flop.
Yeah.
Is it almost lunch? It is lunchtime.
Yeah.
No. No? I don't know.
10 past.
No, the water is not boiling.
The what?
Water is not boiling?
The water is not boiling.
That's not.
Is that?
We have 20 minutes.
Huh?
We have 20 minutes.
Okay, 20 minutes. So, but as soon as we start saying that something has to have value, then we can't say everyone's a failure. Then we would say some people are failures, but I'm not, or some people are failures and others are successful. When we start putting values on things, right? You know, personally, in my situation of losing my job, as it were, I don't see it, I don't feel like I'm a failure. And I don't really feel like I'm losing something. I feel more like I'm, it was very auspicious that it happened the day after we had signed or agreed to rent the place, because now, suddenly, I will have no more limits. I used to be very limited because I had to work, I couldn't take vacation, I could only do so many activities with the Zen group, but I don't know. I'm free.
I can't.
This does not take away from the fact that I will have to feed, clothe, and house myself. I will have to find some way of supporting myself. But I know, or I feel intuitively that this is a real opportunity. And everyone I've told it to says the same thing to me. Initially, when you say, oh, I've lost my job, then they're like, oh, really? And then I explain the situation, and they're like, wow, that's amazing, great. You know, even a doctor I saw the other day, she was like, oh, wow, that's a big thing to lose your job. And then we started talking, and she said, oh, this is a great opportunity. You're starting a center. Wow, that's great. You know, so I also will have much more time for my writing. And I've always, I'm just talking about my situation again because it can be an example. I'm hoping that it will serve as an example for me and for others. The two major, or the three major activities in my life have been my art, my Zen, and my children, none of which provide any dividends monetarily. I just recently got a letter from the publisher of my last book saying, can you please send us your bank information so we can send you your royalties? I was stunned. Royalties from a book of poems? It'd probably be like, you know, 10 euros maybe, I don't know, but... royalties, that's an interesting word, huh? What do you say in French?
Droit
d'auteur. Droit d'auteur. Yeah, droit d'auteur, that's right. Which is actually more appropriate than... But even the fact that there should have to be a special category that the author doesn't benefit wholly from his or her work. somebody else is, you know, taking a profit from it and then we give you a few peanuts. Royalties is a really interesting word, actually, though. That must come from some, must come from England, you know, and something to do with the king, you know, I don't know. You know, it's like the guy, one of the founders of America, Benjamin Franklin, one of the great heroes of American culture, history, said this famous thing, the only certainties in life are death and taxes. Which is kind of the truth, huh? You know you're going to die and you got to pay taxes, right? So. And there's even things like death tax, right? You know, don't you, like, when you die, the people who come after you have to pay a bunch of taxes on the fact that you died. Isn't there a death tax? Don't they call it that? A death tax or something? I don't know. I think in English there is, but you know, the Anglo-Saxons are the true masters of this, putting economic value on things. So
yeah, there is a lot of dividend about dying, at least in France. You better know if you're alone. I mean, you better know what you're doing if you're about to die, because there is a lot of things who can be taken from you. And
you mean what you leave behind, or
connected to what you leave behind, and all other things too. I mean, connected with the state and.
It's complicated.
C'est très, 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 très compliqué.
Well, in the U.S. too. I mean, Prince, as we know, died and apparently didn't leave a will. So what are they going to do with it? And it's astounding that someone like him, who was such a militant for protecting his work and not letting other people, you know, not letting the record companies own it and things like that. And now what's going to happen to all his work?
Oh, he's dead.
He is. That's true. But his work is alive. So somebody's going to be making money from it.
Yeah.
And he apparently didn't get to say, or he didn't say, who. He has siblings, and they apparently are the ones who will benefit from it. But even that, you know, it's like we all benefit from an artist's work. We don't need money from it, you know. We just told you about this fabulous piece of work by John Journeau, and I was benefited immensely from it. The dividends were, you know, numberless. I didn't get any money. In fact, I paid to go see it. No, I didn't actually. I used my press card, so. It's free. This is another dividend from my paid employment that I will be losing, is my press card. All those free museum visits and things. But but this practice is really just about that. Like, you know, so if you come back to the value of a life, it's even more. What is a life? What is life? Who are you? You know, not who you think you are. I once had this dream about the time I started practicing, where I was riding in the car with someone, with Alain, actually, my husband. He wasn't my husband yet, but I was riding in my old neighborhood when I was a child. And we came to a stoplight, and I looked at the car next to me, and the driver was a blue carnation. A blue carnation is a carnation. It's how do you say that in French? The flower carnation. It's a really common flower.
An iris, c'est pas ça?
No. Anyway, it's a very fairly common flower. And they're not usually blue, but anyway. So they looked nice. This driver was a blue carnation. And I suddenly realized that I was a blue carnation. By looking at the other one, I realized that I was a blue carnation.
What does this have to do with the flower?
A blue carnation is a flower.
Right.
And I was in this dream.
Oh, you were in this dream.
I had forgotten.
Okay. I missed that part.
I was in a dream. I was having this dream. And I was riding in the car.
Okay.
And we stopped at a stoplight, and I looked at the driver in the car next to me, and it was a blue carnation.
Wow.
And upon seeing the blue carnation, I realized that I was a blue carnation. It's kind of like the tiger story. I hadn't thought of that until right now, but it's kind of like that. In that, you know, when we see... Oh, this was kind of... Actually, I think in the dream, I knew I was a blue carnation, and I looked at the driver and saw the driver was also a blue carnation. It was something like that. But when we see who we are, then we see who the others are. Not what their passport says, not their age and their occupation, well, if they're employed or not. They're employed as being a human like I am. You know, they are a manifestation of life like I am. And when we see that, that's the only thing we have to see. The rest comes after that. We see the impermanence. We see the greed, we see the anger, we see the ignorance. There's nothing else we have to see. If we see that, we see it all. Of course, then that's only the beginning, because then we have to live. We have to live with that. And how do we do that? And what do we do then?
I mean, what you're talking, for me, what you're talking about are these phrases, form is emptiness, and emptiness is form.
Sure, it's the same thing, yeah.
And then the question is, how do we live this form?
Mm-hmm.
And this, also what Dobin says in the Fukanza Senki, about this thinking, non-thinking, we think we have to think the form together.
Mm-hmm.
But the form is the form.
Mm-hmm. That's right. This is the form.
This is
yeah.
it.
This is the
it.
Form.
So
we
stand in the way with our thinking.
Mm-hmm.
Giving value is the thinking function,
mm-hmm.
but it is a function of the form. It's part of the form.
Mm-hmm.
Even if we damn that we give things a function or ourselves a value, but that's part of the game.
Mm-hmm. But it's empty. That's
it's
the thing.
Empty, right. It's a manifestation of emptiness.
That's
but
right.
It's still there.
It's absolutely there. And if we don't see that it's there, if we try to just say, oh, it's not
then
really there.
Ignorance too.
Exactly. That's ignorance as well. And there's a strong temptation to say that.
Right. That's the stick of emptiness.
To not pay any attention, to say, okay, well, I don't have to worry about this. You know, this is... this is.
Well, there is another way to say it. Is such... c'est ainsi. C'est ainsi.
Yeah.
So it's the denying of the value is the one extreme, and the identification with the value is
the
other.
Mm-hmm. And it's neither one or the other.
And that's the whole thing.
Absolutely. Yeah.
When you spoke about being redundant for unemployed people, I think this is a feeling of old people, some old people.
Old
people.
Âgé.
Yeah.
Ah. Mm.
An old woman I know sometimes tell me I am useless, which is about the same.
Mm-hmm.
Unemployed, without value, without reason to be alive. And I spoke of it to somebody who told me, you could ask to this old woman if she thinks that a baby is useful. And I think it was very interesting, because baby is not considered as being useless. An old person may be considered as being useless, but in fact a baby is no more active and useful than old people.
Well, and I think generally in that situation, people think of babies as being en devenir, as with a future.
It's an investment.
And so exactly, with potential and rising, whereas people think of old age as being decline and losing as a loss.
We give that? I mean, that's my everyday life. That's what I mean. What's the value of death? We don't give death the value. We push it. I mean, how many people are refugees because they are threatened by death, very concretely?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We're all threatened by death.
No,
yeah.
But, and that's,
yeah.
I more and more I come this, we're running away from death,
yeah,
all the time. With
absolutely
all the values we give things, it's all a running away.
Mm-hmm.
And instead of giving this a value and facing it, and going into it, that's emptiness.
we were not.
Hmm.
We were never.
Well, but
we
if we realize that, then we would never have a problem with dying.
Right. But then we could live thusness.
Exactly.
We could live what?
Thusness.
Just be with what is, you know.
This is it.
It's just this. But if we think that
we are.
Exactly. Yeah, if we think we are, that's why the Buddha, when he was asked, you know, do I exist or not, he didn't answer. Because it's not that we don't exist, and it's not that we exist. You can't answer it. It's like, you know, to answer would be to stay in the dualistic point of view. So,
it's an end, not an or.
J'ai pas tout compris dans ce que vous avez dit. Donc, Evie disait que la mort avait une valeur et qu'on ne.
On ne le donne pas, on ne reconnaît pas son valeur.
Oui, alors
valeur.
Qu'il a une valeur.
Ça, valeur
oui.
Comme le reste. Oui.
Et toi, tu disais si.
Non, et elle a dit si on. On ne voit pas que. Enfin, je ne me souviens pas
si
exactement.
Si on pouvait voir la valeur de la mort, on pouvait vivre de manière juste avec ce qui est. Pas donner une valeur à.
Et voir la valeur de la mort.
Parce que quand on essaie. Il y a un déni devant la mort parce qu'on croit qu'on est. Et on pense que si on meurt, on n'est plus.
Mm-hmm.
Mais et donc si on voyait que on n'est pas, déjà, on n'aurait pas de problème avec la mort parce que ça n'implique pas qu'on n'est plus.
Mm-hmm.
Tu vois là.
And I mean, it's always so touching for me when I'm talking with these people and how they grow. I mean, most people I don't take care for more than a few weeks before they die. And they grow. And I always think it's such a pity that they die. But of course they grow because they have nothing to lose.
Exactly. Mm-hmm.
They grow.
They grow as people.
Mm-hmm.
If you give them a chance and you value them, they grow, and it's so amazing to be allowed to go with them and to see their growth.
Well, and our practice is that same idea. You know, John Giorno is manifesting that of having, you know, nothing to lose, so he can thank for everything. He's thankful for everything because he has nothing to lose. You know, he's thanking for nothing. And our practice is about that. Of course, it's not concretely, you know, lying there on our deathbed. But it's we are in that same position, although it's not, of course, in that same position. But the practice is the same, you know. So can we grow in the same way?
Maybe we can say also that there are many cases in life in which we are at the end of something or in a process of ending something. And it's like a sort of death
mm-hmm.
also.
Comme en français, on dit partir, c'est mourir un peu.
Mm-hmm.
Or we see that there is no end to anything because
that's right.
It's no, there's no beginning.
There's no beginning. There's no
end.
Okay,
the whole heart sutra, up and down.
Mm-hmm.
We have to stop at this point. So there is an end. And there was a beginning, and there will be lunch, and lunch will be finished, and there will have to be another meal at another point. So.